This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Free for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. As football fans, we often pride ourselves on knowing everything, from which substitution can turn the game around to the quickest route home to beat the crowds. However, when it comes to discussing feelings with our friends, we might not always feel as confident. That's why we're here to equip you with the right tools so you can reach out to those who can help. If your mates are struggling, let them know that the Samaritans are free to call on 116 123. That's 116 123. They are there to listen without judgment or pressure, 24/7, 365 days of the year. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
This is the besotted Pride of West London podcast. We're coming to you on the eve of Leeds United coming down to New Griffin Park. The last time they came down to New Griffin Park, last game of the season, and it went very well for Leeds. Didn't go quite as well for the mighty, mighty Bees, but doesn't matter because we're back here. New season, new match, new matchup, as they say. I'm Billy Grant, and like I said to you, I'm sitting here in the virtual joint because I've been in the pub far too much the last few days, so I had to withdraw. And in the virtual joint, I'm sitting here with my man, Laney. Laney, how are you?
I'm good, mate. Yeah, busy Thursday and transfer deadline day today. So, and then we've got another game, as you said, on the horizon. They come thick and fast this week. So it's all good. Lots to look forward to.
That's right. Much to look forward to. Like I said to you, we normally put our podcast out first thing on Thursday morning, but having a game against Palace on Tuesday night, it shifts things a little bit. Plus, we had transfer deadline day. We thought, tell you something, let's record just a little bit later to see if there's going to be any activity, because there is a few. There's a bit of smoke, actually, on the horizon, wasn't there, Laney? There's a bit of smoke, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was. Yeah, I mean, some of the smoke doesn't look like it's going to kind of bellow our way. So, the big transfer that you never know. Yeah, the window has not slammed shut yet. There's still time. But I don't think that one's going to happen. But there's been, you know, a couple of other fairly significant outgoings. Well, you know, one fairly significant one, and one kind of one we've all kind of expected. So we've done all our business early, haven't we? Really. So it's just obviously just making sure that we trim down the squad and we've got players that are happy and they're not sitting on the bench when they need to be playing and stuff. So it's a couple of outgoing loanees, Bill.
Loanees indeed. So yeah. So listen, we've got quite a lot on the podcast for you today. You know what we've got? We've got JB. You know, with his facts and his funk. Of course, we're going to be listening to the fans after the Everton game and also the Crystal Palace game as well. Directly after the game, we'd like to hear their thoughts. And then we've got Darren from the LS 11 Leeds podcast, who's going to be giving us the lowdown on Leeds United. But just coming back to transfer deadline day, Laney. This is our first Premier League transfer deadline day, our first ever Premier League sort of transfer window. I'm going to ask you, does it feel different? Because it doesn't feel as sort of frantic as it has done in the past. I don't know if that's just a general thing or if it's just a Premier League thing for us. I mean, we seem to have done sort of quite a bit of business early in the day. Now, I don't know if we've done it early because we're a Premier League team now, so players actually want to come to us finally because we actually stayed in the Premier League, or whether or not it's just kind of no one's really doing any business, or if it's the fact that because Nottingham Forest have actually bought up all the players, so there's no players to buy anymore.
Really, I thought it was our third Premier League transfer window.
But, yes.
Yeah.
Well, but it's our first one this August,
this season,
isn't it?
Yeah, this summer. First one this summer. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, but it's been a really impressive window for us. We've set our stall out. We've spent some significant money. We've kind of addressed areas in the squad that we were light on. I still think the DOFs and the fans would like to see probably a little bit more pace on the left side. Or certainly up front, giving a bit more cover for Ivan Toney if he gets injured. But that's not really a problem, Wiesa, he's proven himself to be a sub rather than a starter. We've got KLP, he's getting more and more time. He's only going to get stronger. So that's kind of probably the left sided situation sorted out for this season. We seem to be solid pretty much everywhere. I think if we want to push on to the next level or incrementally get better this season, we've done enough to do that. We just need to kind of look around us and see what some of our competitors, the way they've been spending money and what they're getting for that money. And I think once you compare ourselves to some of the similar position clubs, we seem to have got a lot for our money. We've got Damsgaard as well, which is a landmark signing. We were obviously all wondering what was going to happen after Christian Eriksen had vacated the building. The stereotype is Brentford, we're going to struggle without him. It doesn't look like we're doing that. It looks like we're thriving without him. The Man United game was a wake-up call for a lot of those pundits to show that we weren't a one-man team. And then we've got people like Aaron Hickey, we'll talk about in a bit. They're really sort of getting their feet under the table now, and they're really starting to sort of like show their full range of skills, and all the money that we've spent on them looks like money well spent. So from my perspective, it's been a really exciting and really really impressive window. I don't know about you, Bill.
I think it's good because I feel comfortable coming out of this window. I've had quite a few interviews, quite a few sort of kind of press interviews as well, where they've asked us, what am I think? Am I happy with Brentford's progress from last season into this season? Do I think that we're going to get relegated? How do I think we're going to do? And I'm saying actually, I think that we're actually a stronger side than we are last season. And again, it's not a disrespect for the players we had last season. I think the players we had last season did very well and got us to where we are now. And it's also given them a platform where they can go to, if they're going to move on, they'll go to further places. But, instead of going on to, and again, not disrespecting a team, but going to, AFC Wimbledon or, going to, to Ipswich, you might be going to a team, high up in the Championship or maybe lower Premier League, or maybe going abroad to a team which got a bit of a profile as well. So that's all helped that. So everyone's sort of kind of gaining out of this. So Brentford, I think for me, like I said to you, picking up the players that we picked up has definitely got us to another level. Aaron Hickey is... we'll talk about him when we talk about the Palace game, but he's looking like he is starting to he knows the names of his teammates now, which is a good thing. So that's good, and you can see in the way that he plays, which is good. KLP, Keen Lewis Potter is still finding his feet as such. The argument is going to be who is the impact player off the bench. Is it KLP? Is it Wiesa? I think we'll probably be rotating between the two for the next 6 months to find out what the right combination is. But he's still getting game time in a league that he was definitely very, very, a million miles away from last season. So look, I'm happy with what they've done. As we speak now, because we're recording on the Thursday of transfer deadline day, the deal's not done. Brentford may have more players by the time you listen to this, but we can only talk about what we know now and what we've heard on the besotted grapevine as well, saying that we are probably there or thereabouts. But if something might sneak in at the last moment, and talking about sneaking at the last moment, and talking about speed as well, and talking about pace in the side, we're going to talk about one player, Mudryk, who is one player that we have been going on about for quite a while. And he's the player that he's almost into Brentford. Oh, no, he didn't quite happen. Oh, yeah, he's not happening. It's just yo-yoing to and fro. I think all the problems I wouldn't say problems because it sounds like somebody on the other side is giving us grief, but all the reasons why it hasn't gone how it's supposed to is, I think it's financial mainly. It's the deal of the president of Shakhtar, where they just want to make as much money as possible. And the way it works in Ukraine, basically, they make money. They don't make any TV money. They don't make any money from the leagues. They don't get any of that. That money does not exist in the Ukraine. What they do is that you get into Europe and you get money there. You get TV money from the Europe. And then also you get money by inflating the prices of your players and selling them big. So when the price is big, they sell big. So that, you know, these teams will sell at one stage if the price is right. And Shakhtar Donetsk, for whatever reason, you know, maybe it's because they had Arsenal sniffing around, but maybe Arsenal didn't come in for him. They're probably thinking, we feel that we can get even more money because we saw how much they bought Ben White for and how much they're going in for, you know, all sorts of characters, you know what I'm saying? How much money they pay for all sorts of characters. So maybe they think they can get a good watch out of Arsenal, so they're holding back, which is a bit of a shame, because if you look at this player, he is the type of player that we would need, and the rumours that we've, you know, put our record bid of 30 million in for him, which is very non-Brentford, old school Brentford. But as I said to you, Christian Eriksen coming into our side, I think we've seen exactly the type of player which will take us to another level. And I think if we find that type of player, we're willing to put our neck on the line as such. But it looks like Shakhtar are trying to try and get more. And it moved from, you know, we put in 15 million last January and they wanted 20, you know, and then they said, and then they shut up shop. No, we're not going to sell. And now they've gone from 20 to 30 to whatever. And some people are saying 50. And it's kind of like it's a never moving feat. And I suppose for Shakhtar, at one stage, they're going to have to twist or stick. And they keep on twisting at the time. And they were almost on a bit of a fluffer as well, because obviously when the war took place, the price crashed, because all of a sudden it's like, you know, players' values went down. But they've managed to kind of, you know, maintain. And again, it's a good thing for the clubs, because you don't want them to be ripped off as such. So they've managed to maintain the value by kind of keeping hold of the player, and the values come back into the marketplace. And they're trying to get as much of it as they can. But as I say, you never know what might happen. They may decide at, you know, whatever, 5-10 minutes before the deadline, actually, we just need to cash in, and Phil Giles gets a quick phone call and you're done, Laney.
Yeah, well, you know, that would be an incredible bit of business. You know, I've seen the clips of him. I saw some of the games in the qualifiers for the World Cup. He played a part in that. He's obviously young, he's fast, he's a very skillful player, someone that we can come in and improve. Having him in the Premier League will kind of elevate us even further. I mean, what this window has shown us is Brentford are kind of a very, very different Brentford to the one that was even, you know, this time last year, let alone 3 years ago, let alone 5 years ago. You know, we're spending the amount of money now that's required to get, you know, significantly quality players. You know, these aren't just potential from lower leagues who we could turn. You know, these are top flight ready in a lot of cases. You know, we'll take a punt on a bargain probably, but these are kind of like opportunities where we're setting, we've made a statement really, that we're confident that we're not going anywhere for the foreseeable future, which, you know, on two scores is brilliant for the fans. It means that we're gonna without taking anything at all for granted, we're gonna, you know, be getting incrementally better year on year, in terms of the squad and what we can expect and what we can hope. And, you know, when we come up against the bigger clubs, instead of looking to not lose, we can look to win, you know. And it's significant. It's a turning point in our club's history, I think, Bill.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, incomings as well, there's always been a rumour about this, was a Shard from Freiburg as well, who is, I think he's injured at the moment now. I know he didn't play in his game the other day where they had an, I can't remember what it was, I think that they had an XG, again, you know, if you know about XG, they had an XG of over 5, I think it was. They had a ridiculous amount of chances in the box, really good, high quality chances. So Freiburg and like I said, an XG of like 5.2 or 5.9, it was ridiculous. And they won their game 1-0. Like, you know, so it's one of those kind of like the antithesis to the Birmingham game, where Birmingham literally
XG nonsense, Bill.
That's right. So yeah. So maybe it's because was it this Shard or whatever his name is?
Maybe he's not injured enough. Maybe he's not injured enough for us. because, you know, maybe he needs a worse condition for us to want to buy him.
Well, that's true, actually. So, you know, like I said to you, he wasn't playing for that game, and maybe they needed him in that game to actually put those balls in the back of the net, and maybe that's upped his price again. He's upped his price by not playing for them, like, you know. So I don't know whether or not he's just going to appear, you know, on a Brentford treatment table instead of a Freiburg treatment table instead. And we will find out at the end of this window. So we should say, so that's an interesting one. So there's a player sort of kind of coming in, rumours in and out. There's been a few players going out though, isn't there, Lainey?
Yes, there have been. Yeah, we've, you know, Halil Devasoglu was a player that we've talked about on the podcast quite a bit the last few weeks, saying, you know, he's back, he's like, he returns every summer like the Swallows and the Swifts, and he comes back and then he's busy for a bit and then he buggers off somewhere else and we don't really see a lot of him. So he's a player that's kind of been in and around the first team squad, but I don't think any fan has really had enough opportunity to kind of really, you know him too intimately and what his potential is. Interesting that the club, they just push him out on loan again. They don't seem to really want to sell him, because I'm sure there's an option for them as well. So I think
you've got to create value for him.
I think we have to. I mean, that's the perfect, you know, that's a perfect sort of summing up of your situation. So he's gone off to Burnley for until January, I believe. I'm not sure it's a season long loan. I think it's a shorter term loan. So we might be pushing him out so he gets minutes in the Championship, gets match fit, gets match sharp, gets some goals under his belt, and we've got that option to bring him back in January or sell him in January, depending on you know what he wants to do, what we want to do. The one that's not been confirmed as yet, but we're hearing that Masbeck Sorensen is going to Olympic Nice, OCG Nice, which is a kind of a landmark loan. We're not sending him back to AFC Wimbledon. He is going to one of the biggest clubs in France. And OCG Nice have other players that you probably know about. You probably know lots of them, but the ones that stand out for me, Kasper Schmeichel, we know, moved from Leicester to Nice during the summer. Aaron Ramsey, the ex-Arsenal player. And Joe Bryan, who was at Fulham. So there's kind of like, there's some familiar-ish names at Nice, but you know, if he gets minutes and if it happens, they've got Monaco on Sunday night. So it's kind of a high profile opportunity, and it's, you know, for me, you know, I think Madsbeck has had a very shaky start to the season. He wasn't his strongest. He did have moments last year, to the back end of last year, where I thought, right, this guy's the real deal now, after his injury, and he got called up into the Danish national, like the first team, into the squad for the summer fixtures. But it's a big opportunity for him. If he can get his form back and he can get game time, he could be in that World Cup squad that goes to Qatar in the winter. So yeah, you know, we wish him well. He's a good lad. He's done nothing wrong at Brentford. He's matured. He's grown from a kid into a man, and now he needs to get some game time. And you know, I know that the DOFs and the coaches, they rate him, and they've got a lot of time for him. And you know, I'm sure he'll be back, and hopefully he's back stronger and even better than he was towards the tail end of last year.
Okay, so listen, good luck to them. Like I said, transfer window, we will find out what happens by the end of the day today. But listen, whatever happened in the transfer window today, it doesn't affect what happened last weekend and also on Tuesday. We're going to go back and we're going to talk about the Everton game and the Crystal Palace game after this break. So, Brentford versus Everton on Saturday, and even Stevens. So, between Everton, two wins to us and a draw. So, that's not a bad record for a team with such a history, as they'd say. And then Everton came to Brentford and they came with one aim, really, is to just get anything out of this game. And they went ahead, quite annoyingly, I would say. You know, was it 20, 25 minutes into the game with But again, it's one of those situations which is really annoying. The aerial attack that teams do on us, where we seem to sometimes get caught out on. They caught us out on that. And the golden boy, Gordon, you know, slotted the ball into the corner. They went ahead. And then after that, there was all sorts of time wasting going on, wasn't there, Laney?
Yeah, there was. Yeah, it was proper time wasting. Yeah, it was real negative mindset. I spoke to one of my Everton authors. He wrote a brilliant book called Making the Grade. He was an apprentice at Goodison. I think it was 1970 or 71 when they won the title, and he was in and around the first team, like cleaning boots and making cups of tea. So it's an excellent book. And you know, he's a season ticket holder. He always has been. And we speak a fair bit, and he was almost as embarrassed about his team as I was. And I said, you know, we expect, you know, coming up to this division, I know there's always a lot of kind of, you look at the name and, you know, you kind of work out how big a team is based on, you know, things that aren't anything to do with what, you know, their players really, or the form, you know, oh, they're a big club. But I just expected so much more from Frank Lampard's Everton. You know, they looked like they had relegation blinkers still on, that they grabbed a lead and they started protecting it from you know, half an hour in. And yeah, I know away from home, you know, I know all of those things, because we did it, you know, a couple of times last season, where by hook or by crook you hold on to the lead and you kind of protect what you've got. But I would have thought we're in a very different situation to Everton. And they did it again at Leeds on Tuesday night. You know, the Leeds fans and Jesse Marsh, and they were going crazy. That, you know, after taking the lead, it was almost deja vu. Gordon put them one up, and you know, Lampard was asked on the press conference that I saw about time wasting, and he kind of looked a little bit like nose put out that anyone could accuse him and his team of time wasting. But then he flipped it back and said, oh, you know, the Leeds supporters, they weren't giving the ball back quick enough, you know, they're obsessed, they're, you know, which they are, but you know, he tried to flip it he tried to be clever, and he wasn't. It looked pub teamy, you know. It's you do. They've got enough score. They've got enough skill and enough experience and enough quality in that team still, with the right game plan, to do much better than that. And I just thought, you know, I was delighted to get something out of Saturday's game, Bill, because at one stage I thought this is the ultimate frustration, like that Birmingham City game, first game of the season. They get a chance, they take it, and there's no way back for us. I was just really mighty relieved to avoid that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just flicking here and looking at 538. If we look at every now and again, it's the predicted league table done by the statisticians as well, who are normally sort of, well, I don't say relatively spot on, because last season they had Nottingham Forest sort of kind of near the bottom, and obviously they got promoted in the end. But as it is, like I said, on the current form, Everton still, they've predicted them to be still in the bottom three at the end of the season, along with Nottingham Forest, with Bournemouth at rock bottom. Like, you know, so, and you know, 38 points, which is about 6 points clear, 4 points clear of actually fourth place, which they said is going to be fourth and bottom, it's going to be Wolves. Now, this is the beginning of the season, and anything can happen, but it's interesting, you know, how they see maybe the way that they're playing, you know, kind of like, you know, the goals that they're scoring, the way that they're playing, whether or not they're, you know, putting the balls in the back of the net the way that they should be. I don't know, and predict it. If they carry on doing this for the end of the season and everyone else carries on like they are, then Everton aren't kind of really improving. So maybe, and this is the big question. I mean, I was asked again at the beginning of the season on The Observer who I thought was going to be the first manager to get sacked, and I've got that completely wrong, actually, because I didn't see Scott Parker going, even though I predicted them to be bottom, I think it was. I put Frank Lampard, and no, it's actually Scott Parker has gone. So Everton have got a bit of work to do this season, looking at what happened, how they played against us, and also how they played against Leeds, from what I can gather as well, where apparently Leeds weren't very good in the first half, but in the second half they picked it up a bit. And I think Leeds fans all said that they were quite surprised by the, you know, your Leeds mate said as well, but also, you know, my Leeds mate said they were surprised by the time wasting by the Everton. And, you know, maybe, I don't know, for them, you know, transfer window, are they doing business? Are they going to be any different in
you know, a week or two's time than they are now? Are they strengthening? Are they struggling to strengthen? I don't know what's happening. You know, Gordon, is he going to go? Is he not going to go? It doesn't sound like he's going to go. Yeah, but I mean, Everton, listen, I've got no idea where they're going to be going this season. And we're not talking about Everton now. I mean, we're talking about the Everton game, okay? But it did surprise me. I'll tell you what surprised me most about this Everton game is we went into that match and a lot of people were expecting us to win, right? Which kind of shows you where we've come. Then a lot of people also were really worried that a lot of people expected us to win. They said that we need to kind of level ourselves down a little bit because we've got to remember where we come from and it's not really important. And then when we went to the game, there were some people that were really gutted that we didn't win, right, after the match. But then on the other side, there were a lot of people that they went back to the pub and they just had a drink and they had a bit of a laugh and a chat. And they just thought, oh, this is great. We just drew against Everton. And, you know, it's just one of the things. What's the next game? And it kind of reminded of when we were in sort of mid-third division. And you used to turn up to Brentford to go and watch football and just have a laugh, meet your mates beforehand, have some drinks, go and see a game, be entertained by the game or maybe not entertained by the game and go home and just be really content and happy. And, you know, there was none of this top table or bottom table stuff. It was just, this is my existence to go and watch football and just enjoy it. And that's kind of what the Everton game felt like, which it's almost like it seems like a sort of kind of mid-table kind of we're comfortable where we are. Does that make sense, Laney?
Yeah, it does make sense. I don't think we're quite at that stage yet where we can look at an opponent and go, we're gonna win this. I don't think we've got that consistency or that kind of the quality that's just there on tap the whole time. I think every single victory depends on a lot of factors, and that might be stating the obvious, but I think at this level every single team is capable of really hurting you. And I think if all our chances go in on Saturday, we've got a handsome victory on our hands again, like we did against Man United. That didn't happen. So when that doesn't happen, I think we can take comfort in that, in the fact that last year I believe we would have lost that game. And I think last year we would have lost the Leicester game, and last year we probably would have lost the Crystal Palace game. I know we'll talk about Palace in a minute, but so they're the improvements that I can see. I think we can be more confident that our team have got the quality to be in most games all of the time. Whether there's a point or 3 points there then depends on how well they mark Ivan Toney, how clinical or otherwise Brian Mbeumo is. If we've got Wiese coming off the bench or starting, if anyone else is going to wade in with a goal, if Norgaard's going to hit the bar again, or he's going to, you know, like he did at Fulham, he's going to hit the back of the net. There's a lot of factors, but my main point is that I think we can be more confident of picking up more points through the season. We have got better, but I just don't think we're at that level yet where we can just look at Everton and go, we're going to win that, and we turn up and we do win that. Like Leicester were doing, and Leicester were doing 3 or 4 years ago. They had that extra wow factor where, although they weren't not the year they won the title, but subsequent seasons where they still had, you know, players that are probably further along their journey than ours are currently. I think maybe next year, hopefully, we'll be in that position where we can take a little bit more for granted when we turn up, when an out of form Everton turn up and we go, we're going to win on Saturday, because our players are at that level yet. We're moving in the right direction though.
Yeah, so in that match, Brentford, we created a high number of chances relative to our possession and also were effective at creating goal-scoring opportunities from the set pieces. We were poor at finishing as well, and we're going to talk about the XG in a minute. You know, we tacked through the middle and also crossed the ball a lot. Everton, they stole the ball from us a lot and also created goal-scoring opportunities through balls. They didn't have any weaknesses in that game particularly. Attacked down the right, had a high shot frequency, went in possession and favoured through balls. Annoyingly, Tarkowski actually had a good game in defence, and he could have actually scored against us, which was quite bad as well. You know, Tarkowski, strike man, like, you know what I'm saying. Norgaard, great game as well. Raya as well, good game. Ben Mee as well. We could talk about these players who had a great game as well. But the interesting player, you know, I think we should talk about just for a little bit, is that's Anthony Gordon, because he's a player that you'd heard quite a lot about. They're talking about £60 million potential transfer for Gordon. You turn around and think, you know, is he really worth it? You look at how many goals that he scored and you think, is he or isn't he? You know, are the teams sort of going in too early, too high? To be fair, you know, when he played against us, I thought that he had a good game and he looked quite lively. Interestingly, you know, he had the most shots on goal, 5 shots on goal as well. And also he had the most tackles as well. So, you know, he's kind of doing both sides. He's on both sides of the fence as well. Anthony Gordon, did he impress you, Laney?
Yeah, he did. And he's impressed me pretty much every time I've seen him play. He looks so comfortable on the ball, and his control and his first touch, there is something definitely special about him. He's quick. He's difficult to push off. He bounces back, and now he seems to be sort of finding those pockets and having the confidence where his teammates kind of are looking out for him. He's certainly matured. Now, whether he's a £60 million player, as you rightly said, that's for the market to decide. You know, I personally, you know, as an observer of transfer fees, I think £60 million, you want someone kind of like world-class for that kind of money. I wouldn't put him there quite yet, but, you know, he's certainly on the radars of DOFs around the Premier League, and you know, a lot of them really they're real studious. They're not there because they're good at talking about football down the pub. These guys know their stuff, and you know, if they see something in him or the way he could fit into their team and contribute certain other things, then you know, he's got a bright future. The thing with him is he's so kind of wrapped up in his kind of education at Everton. He's come through the ranks there. It's whether he's personally ready for that jump, and you know, I think Everton clearly want to keep him, because you take him out of that team, they're even worse, you know. So yeah, it'd be interesting. Maybe it's the next window, but yeah, our question was, does he impress me? Yes, he does. He's a cracking little player.
Yeah, he is, definitely. I mean, looking at that game statistically wise, 2.57 is the XG for the Bees, 1.72. We created actually a lot of very big chances in the box. There's an argument to say that we should have put more away in that game. I mean, we talked about that again, missed chances. You know, there's at least probably five proper sort of kind of dead cert chances that maybe we should have put away, according to the stats people as well. But on the other hand, we also did give Everton quite a few good chances. They had 3/4 actually very good chances in the box that they could have put away. So it could have been a 5-4 game as far as it goes on. I wouldn't have been too sad if it was 5-4, to be quite honest with you, which is all good. Like I said, 2.57 to 1.72, and like I said to you, it was you know, shots wise, 20 shots from the Bees to 14 to Everton. But again, it's the quality of the chances that you get and you put them in the back of the net. But at the end of the day, it was only one chance a piece that was put into the back of the net. I mean, this Everton game, I mean, listen, tell you what I think we need to do, because we've talked about it quite a bit. Well, let's go to the fans. Let's see what the fans had to say after the Everton game. But also, we're going to check out what the fans had to say after the Crystal Palace game. Then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about that Palace game in midweek.
I didn't think Everton were all that, really. I thought we played all right, mostly. They targeted the balls over the top in the first half, one which led to the goal, but we played good football. You know, Brian had a great chance. We should have been one up. We hit the post, we hit the bar. Came. I think, you know, credit again for getting that point back. I think last year we didn't pick up enough points like that. We probably came away with nothing from a few games. So, wanted three, but probably take one.
I feel, again, that's a bit 2 points dropped at the GTEC Stadium rather than 1 point gained. Everton didn't look that impressive. They were there for the beating. We had at least 4 attempts on goal which should have gone in. And really, no, I think we should be satisfied that we managed to claw one back at the end. But really, I'm going to be very condescending. Possibly, we're reaching the stage where actually we have the hashtag teams like Everton we should be beating at the stadium.
I think we should have won that game. They worked really hard. They worked so hard. And I think the interesting thing about Everton versus us today is we were looking at it as one game, and actually they played as if they were still fighting relegation. And maybe that's how they'll avoid relegation. And they might end up doing better than that, but they were everything on the line, and we couldn't get around them, to be fair. But I'm just still very frustrated. I'm glad we got the goal because it would have felt even worse without Mark. That was a very, very energetic and frustrating watch. I need to lie down now.
We deserved a lot more than a point, but you know, the fact that we had to come back, you accept a point in the end. But no, really, we were the better team. We deserved 3 points. We never got it. That's fine. That's what happens. But frustrated all the time, wasting from Everton was really, really annoying. And I mean, if we came away with nothing, there would have been a real frustration going on. But we did fine in the end.
Time wasting tactics of Everton, really, really negative football from literally like kickoff. Pickford in particular was wasting a lot of time. You know, two balls would come on the pitch and he'd pretend to be confused about which ball, and you know, he would take his time. The crowd were counting down the goal kicks. It was very, very cynical. I haven't seen that since Brice Samba with Nottingham Forest, to be honest. That was quite disappointing to see from an England goalkeeper, you know. The referee maybe could have taken a little bit more of a grip of the game. He let the game flow quite a lot, especially in the first half when there were actually quite obvious fouls. Started getting his card out second half, but it was a little bit too late by then. So overall, I'm happy to take a point. You know, we still are unbeaten in that fortress, Griffin Park.
The referee, I don't normally do the referee thing. You know, I'm quite unbiased about that thing, but I did think he was a bit biased.
Rubbish.
Yeah, he was. He was awful. But getting a draw, I think that's a good result.
You know, winning all the games, yeah, we're not being battered about. So I'm quite happy with it all. Christ sake, it's the Premiership. What, you know, it's ridiculous, really. You know, why are we here? But we are. You know, it's great.
It feels like we're having to do the whole work every time. You know, coming from behind, every game apart from the United game. I feel we deserve to go ahead in the first half with our domination, but you know, lack of concentration cost us. And as a great with three centre backs out, that's maybe a good point. But I felt with that first half, the way we played, I think we deserve something from that at the very least.
Mane is just so good at the back, and the one chance came along really, and he put it away. I thought we did all right. I thought we were toe to toe. You can't argue with it, you know. And I've been happy with the point before we started, and we got it.
I think we could have won it near the end, to be honest with you. But overall, I think it'd been 1-1's probably a fair result overall. Yeah, and it's a tough place to come here. Not many people get a point from this place, but yeah, quite satisfied. A little bit gutted that we could have nicked it, I think, near the end. But
because we were 1-0 down to quite near the end, and we should have won it, I thought. We deserved to win that game. We dominated the first half, and I thought we restricted Palace to not many good chances. But, you know, Saha does what Saha does.
When Saha produced that little bit of magic, you thought, well, is it going to happen? But we kept plugging away, made our changes. The subs made a massive difference, and a quality goal to earn us a well-deserved point.
I'll tell you who stood out for me, and I keep saying him every week, is Rico. That man, he's like two players. The guy's got an injury. He needs a drug test after that one, I tell you, because he was everywhere. The guy who's on the left side and the right side, he's tracking back. 1 minute he's up at one end of the pitch and then he's up the next. It's just like, the guy's just incredible.
Brentford chairman Cliff Crown.
I think Palace are a really good team. I think a lot of clubs will come here and struggle. And we matched them throughout the whole game. Zaha had one moment of brilliance and he put it away superbly. And we fought back again from being down. Brilliant equaliser. We played some great football and could have nicked it in the end.
So there you have it, fans. After the Everton game and the Palace game, we've talked about the Everton game. Let's just go back to the Palace game, because maybe they'll merge into the two as well, because there's probably some similar factors there. Palace away from home, Tuesday night, underneath the lights. Trying to get a drink and run around the Palace area is not the easiest task, it has to be said. So you find Beast friends fractured all over sort of South East London, trying to find themselves a little bit of entertainment before the game. Crystal Palace is one of those places where I really do like. It is an old school stadium that has, it just is. You know, the refurbishment has taken place to a certain extent in the home ends. But if you're in the away end, and you ain't got there early, and you found an alternative place to where your seat is meant to be numbered, you're in all sorts of trouble, aren't you, Laney?
Yeah, yeah. It's a bit of a that stand, the Arthur Waite stand where we're housed at Selhurst Park. It's a bit old fashioned, isn't it, to say the least. You know, the view at the back's awful. We were down the front on the right hand side. It was poor down there as well. It's the kind of game you go to as a fan and not expect to see much of the game. You're going there to sing and get behind your team. It's almost like if you actually see the game, it's a bit of a bonus, you know. I know it shouldn't be like that, and we're not accustomed to that, you know, in this century. But that's the way it kind of is there. I had a really good build up to the match. You know, we met, didn't we, in East Dulwich, wasn't it? We had a couple of pints there, headed off to Peckham Rye, had a couple of drinks in the social there, which was quality. And there was a bit of a train fluff, the cancelling trains, so I made it to the game on time. But it was loads of queuing to get into Selhurst Park as well, Bill, wasn't there? It's just an awkward place to get to. I mean, it's not our part of London. I don't really know South London particularly well, so it's all a bit alien to me. But you know, it was just loads of queuing and a bit of a faff to get in.
I mean, it probably wasn't as difficult for us as it was for others, and I think it's one of those things where, you know, I suppose there's an argument to say that, you know, we love Griffin Park. And this is the original Griffin Park because it was our ground. It was very old. It had something unique about it. And we just loved it. And we understood the nooks and crannies. And we kind of put up with it. You know, and I think it's probably the same thing with Crystal Palace fans for their ground. You know, a lot of them would say they understand the problems that they may have. You know, the views, the bars, the crampedness, the, you know, all that kind of stuff. But they say it's our ground and it's unique and it's kind of, you know, very similar to what it was 50 or 60 years ago with a few extensions built here and there. So I suppose they will see it very differently to how other fans will see it. Maybe as Brentford fans, we'll probably see it slightly differently than to how Fulham fans, and I say Fulham fans all up because I know that Fulham fans used to hate coming to Brentford because they say, oh, it's really horrible, you know, it's really old, you know, oh, everyone stands up, you can't have a seat, you know, things like that, which is kind of, well, this is why it's the whole point, you know, we want to stand up, like, you know. So people have different football experiences, I think, and it can be quite hard. And I think with Palace, I think the hard thing is that if somebody comes down there, like I said to you, with their kids, and they get down there late or whatever, that literally their kid can't see. I mean, I was down there with my daughter and her friend, and Bella's quite tall. She's about like 5'9", five foot nine, but her friend was about 5'2", right? And I just kept saying, can you see the other goal? She's like, yeah, I can. She's obviously used to it. She couldn't see a thing, like, you know what I'm saying? So I'm not sure if she saw Saha's goal. I'm not sure if she wanted to see Saha's goal, but she definitely saw Reese's goal, because that was right in front of us until about 500 people jumped on top of her when he scored, because it all went completely bonkers. But, like, you know what I'm saying? So listen, it is one of those things that I can understand the frustration of people, and I suppose you've got to ask the question, what do you want? I mean, I suppose with Palace, you want it to be old school if it has to remain like that, but maybe if they could just sort out the views a bit better, then everyone would be a bit happier.
Yeah, well, they're not going to do that, are they? until they knock that stand down and build something else, you know, it's just that's the way it is there. But you have to go there knowing that, and maybe they'll sell the tickets to, you know, I wouldn't want to be having, you know, restricted access and be stuck in the middle, you know. I don't mean wheelchair use. I mean, like, if I had just like bad knees or something, and you'd struggle. You basically have to stand up during the whole game, in that, which isn't a problem for us and people that want to stand up and sing and dance and do whatever during the game. But there's a lot of people that for standing up for 2 hours would have been pretty agonising. But there you go. That's the way it is there. For, you know, as for the game itself. It was, you said it a minute ago, there was a lot of similarities with the Everton game. We go a goal down, or it was later on in the game. I thought first half we just looked really solid, you know. Of course, you know, when Palace, their team came out, there was a huge amount of attacking options there. They'd set up to cause us trouble, but we defended like just magnificently. So we looked like again. I know I shouldn't be surprised anymore, but it just proved to me that we are in the right league and we're where we deserve. And you know, in with all Palace's attacking threats and Zaha and all the others, we had the match of them, for apart from one world class piece of skill from Zaha, where he curled it in the top corner. Apart from that, obviously we weren't comfortable throughout. You don't expect to be comfortable throughout, but we looked like we were in the contest from the first minute to the last minute. And in the last minute, we could have actually, and I won't say the word nick it, because that looks like it would have been deserved, but we could have grabbed a last gasp winner. And I don't think that would have been unjustified, personally.
Yeah, I mean, again, talking about this game, Palace, they stole the ball from us a lot and also created goal-scoring opportunities from counters as well. We created opportunities from the flanks, but we actually committed a high number of individual errors. Palace, actually, they said no significant weaknesses. They attacked down our right-hand side as well, or cut down their right-hand side as well. And we kind of had no specific style of play. Like I said to you, Yenok came up as who scored as the top-rated player as well, you know, and then a lot of Palace players came in after that. But interestingly, just looking at the two matches, the man of the match, Everton, man of the match, Ivan Toney. Man of the match, runner-up David Raya, and third place was Christian Norgaard. Now look at the Crystal Palace man of the match. It was Rico Henry, his best player. Hickey, runner-up, and third place was Janelt. Now let's talk about Rico Henry, because in that game, I thought that Rico Henry had I thought he had a good game against Everton, right? Okay, didn't come out in the top three of the man of the match, but he against Crystal Palace, he was almost like he wanted to take him on by himself, didn't he?
He was outstanding. His start to the season has just been exceptional. He's doing no harm at all for pushing his way or his name forward for, again, another World Cup place. You know, it surely is only a matter of time before England try and give him a cap. He deserves one on the form he's showing. The pace, the overlapping, you know, yes, you could, there's a question mark over his final delivery and his finishing, you know, but that beautiful reverse pass by Ivan Toney in the last few minutes, where he was, you know, he hit the target, but the goalkeeper, you know, hit his legs, you know, it's almost like Ivan Toney needed to pass to himself there and finished, and we probably would have, you know, we probably would have won that game. But yeah, I, as you said, you know, he's just exceptional. His performance and his commitment is just unquestionable.
Yeah, and just talking about it, like I said to you, it's Besotted Global Man of the Match, our global community. Besotted Global Community, you can catch it on besotted.com/global. Just check it out as well. They voted on it as well as some of the Besotted crew, and we just put it out there to people, and we do it every week. And like I said to you, it's five matches so far, and interestingly, we've had five different best man of the matches. We've had De Silva, Jensen, Toney, me, and Henry. It's interesting because we've had 10 players finish in the top three, with only Janssen and Zanka in the centre-back position, who are the regular starters, who actually haven't featured in one, two or three out of all the players, all the regular players so far. And like I said to you, you know, which is very, very interesting. So I don't know if that's an indicator as to kind of where people are thinking, how players are playing. I know there's going to be a big conversation about when the centre-backs, Aya and also Ethan Pinnock, come back. When those two come back, what are we going to do with our centre backs? Because we're going to be kind of overflowing, even though, you know, we've got Mads Beck, who's gone out to OCG Nice. We could be kind of quite overflowed with that central position, especially if we're going two at the back. If we're going sort of 4-3-3, you know, then who's going to be in, who's going to be out? So that's going to be very, very interesting. And you know, there's also an argument to say that, you know, if one of those players, two of those players, three of those players are on the bench, you know, we've got strength coming off the bench as well, which is what we really, really want. Going back to the Crystal Palace match as well, Aaron Hickey, I mean, he's the other fullback, and I thought he also had a tremendous game. It's almost like he's starting to come of age, isn't he?
Seems to have getting up to speed with what's expected in the Premier League. It's you know, he's a baptism of fire. And as you just rightly said, yeah, he's getting stronger week by week. We obviously, you know, we're not quite sure where the cover is for left back and right back, but let's not worry about that at the moment, because you know, when we have got that full bench with all our defenders, you know, match fit, we've still got plenty of options there. And you know, Thomas Frank has been showing that how intelligent he is by using this five sub system, and the ability to switch it up, you know, mid-match, late match, is just, again, he's coming into his own as well.
Yeah, and he is. And again, talking about the matches, obviously the Leicester match, he brought the substitutions, changed the formation,
and Leicester.
And Leicester. Ah, yeah, you get. I gave you that one, Laney. So you got the Leicester match, and then after that we had the Man United game, which the subs didn't matter in that one because we scored the goals. And then after that, which game was that? After that one, you have to help me with this. Actually, I haven't put it out myself. Who came in after
Man United?
No, we've got the Man United. I've still talked about Man United. So who was after Man United? Was the Fulham? Was that the Fulham game after
Fulham?
Man United?
Yeah, Fulham.
The Fulham game where we were 2-0 down. And then we brought it back to 2-2, and I think there was a substitution in there somewhere, one or two as well, you know, which may have helped that, you know. And then after the Fulham game was the Everton game, wasn't it, where we were 1-0 down, and then he bring in the substitution, and Yanelt actually scored as well. So again, we've got that, and then we've got the Crystal Palace game, we've got the substitution again, which actually helped to change the game. So I'm actually just highlighting there Thomas Frank, not only his tactical changes, but also his substitutions and his super subs. And the question I'm going to ask you there, because Wiesa up front starts the bees. Oh no, we're not quite sure. He needs to be a super sub. KLP up front starts the V's. Wiesa comes on and he scores. What is the combination, or is it not the right combination? Do we have to look at something else, do you think, Laney?
No, I just think the fact is we've got a stronger all-round squad, and I'm not saying it doesn't matter, but you know, once your opposition has got used to the way you're set up and the way you're playing, to chuck substitutes on should do exactly that. It should shake things up. They're not quite as comfortable, and the fact is we're bringing on players now that are as good, if not better, or if not just, you know, marginally not as good, or just offer something else. Is another sign of how strong the window's been for us. We're not just bringing on untried rookies and sort of going, go on lad, go and make a name for yourself. We're bringing on players that we already know can contribute, and contribute a lot. So I just think it's a sign of, you know, the strength and depth, or we've got more strength and depth.
Right, okay. So we are going to go over to JB with his facts and his fun, because JB has got a bit more information on super subs and late, late goals.
Are you ready for this? I told you it was coming. Who? JB. And he's ready to stock it to you one time. Get it.
Hello, Jonathan Birtle here again. With the exception of newly promoted Fulham, the other four Premier League teams we played so far this season were all doubles last year. Leicester and Manchester United had the double victories over us. We did likewise against Everton, while both Crystal Palace games ended 0-0. None of these trends have continued into this season. With it being 0-0 at half-time, it did seem likely we could be heading for another goalless draw. Wissa's late goal ended 394 minutes of league game time since we last scored against Palace, and a first league goal at Selhurst Park since Mickey Bloch's in 1962. It was Wissa's fourth goal as a substitute, drawing him level with Mark Williams and Farid Al-Alagui in our super sub goal scoring list. Against Leeds last season, they scored late in both games, in the fourth and fifth added minutes. In five of our six League and Cup games this season, there has been a goal in the last 10 minutes. It's always worth staying to the final whistle in one of our games.
So there you go, JB, talking about late goals and talking about the Leeds United game. We've got the Leeds United game coming up on Saturday. Leeds United come down to New Griffin Park. Like I said, we met with Leeds a lot in the Championship, so we know a lot about Leeds. They know a lot about us. There's a little bit of niggle that goes on between Leeds and Brentford due to us being in the same division for seasons, being near the top. You know, the Ollie Watkins scenario, the Neil Maupay scenario, the whoever else it may be, whatever reason it may be, there's been all sorts of stuff going on. You know, Bamford celebrating last season and then pulling his whatever he pulled and being out for the rest of the season, celebrating a last minute goal against us. There's all sorts of stuff that's been going on against Leeds, and then they scored a last minute goal against us at the end of the season, which sort of helped to save them from relegation. It didn't in the end. I think Burnley actually saved them from relegation because Burnley couldn't actually win their final game, which they needed to do to save themselves from relegation. So there's all change as it's all back again at New Griffin Park on Saturday. It's a level playing field. Again, Leeds have had a very good start to the season. They've had some very good results. They've got their new manager, or relatively new manager, Jesse Marsh, the American. He's in the MLS. As you know, I follow the MLS quite a lot, so I know a little bit about the Marsh. And like I said to you, he came probably with a different outlook and a different philosophy. And I think a lot of people didn't take him very seriously because he's got an American accent. And so they equated him to Ted Lasso. And obviously Ted Lasso is a person that went into football, if you haven't ever seen the show on Apple TV, and knew nothing about football and ended up managing a team just down the road from Brentford called Richmond FC. And it's a bit of a joke. It's actually quite a good series. And I think they equated him to Ted Lasso, saying he ain't got no idea about any football at all. And then he kept Leeds up. And then they've given a few people a bit of a beating, including Chelsea, our West London rivals down the road. So I think people are sort of sitting up and thinking, hold on a second, maybe this Marsh, maybe no. It's a little bit or two about the football game. So Leeds United, Laney, looking forward to this one.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, it's going to be a feisty encounter. They always are. I'm not going to bring last season's beef into this one. I think it will be a decent game between two decent teams. Both will be getting the ball down and playing. I don't think there'll be time wasting tactics because it's too early in the season. There's, you know, both teams will be going for the win. They've had a decent start to the campaign. We've had a decent start to the campaign, which gives them a little bit of luxury where they can actually just, you know, get the ball down and do their thing. They're not trying to box clever. They're not trying to out tactic. They're not trying to play it tight. Trying to just get a valuable point. They can play with a freedom and expression that, you know, I was going to say Lasso wanting to, but you know, Marsh, he comes over as a decent guy, if I'm honest with you. He's, you know, he doesn't wind me up like Bielsa. You know, people aren't fawning all over him. It's a fresh start. I think it's a game that it'd be an open match. I think it's a game that we could do well out of, but it's going to be another tight one. It could go either way, to be honest.
Definitely, it could go either way. I mean, talk about Leeds United. They're very strong attacking down the wings, also at creating long shot opportunities. Again, which is, again, don't talk to me about long shot opportunities. I mean, it tell you something. I mean, I'll talk about this and we go back to the Palace game, because this long shot opportunity thing, we've talked about this at the beginning. We talked about this last season, where I think it caught us out by surprise because there were so many players who... we play against teams and we do a brilliant defensive job, and then, you know, we give the ball to one of their players on the 35 yard and we wouldn't close them down quite quick enough, but you think, not be funny, he's 35 yards out, bang, back of the net, Trossard, you know, there's all sorts of, and we're like, oh no, we've done so well this game and all of a sudden we've been caught out. And we got caught out again, obviously, by Saha. I mean, I looked at it again and I thought, you know, listen, defenders went in. People argue that Aaron Hickey maybe was a little bit late in closing him down. But I'll not be funny. I think there was two players tried to close him down, but he just got in between the two of them, put in the back of the net. If he shot that 95 other times, that would not have gone into the back of the net, 100%. But he did, which is great. Now, this long shot kind of opportunity thing, and I've said this a million times before, but I still ask the question, is that, you know, is it just one of those things, or is it something that we need to kind of like have a tactic for? Because it's almost like we're sometimes quite comfortable with players doing whatever they can do in certain positions, because you think you're not going to be dangerous there. And if you are, you're going to take the ball and put it, you know, down the wing or slot a through ball and we can deal with that. But if they go bang and put the ball in the back of the net and they're very good at doing that, we seem to get caught out more often than most with that, don't we, Laney?
We get caught out, I don't know about more than most, but I think it just shows that you not even if you switch off, I think it's just the amount of quality there is. You know, there are every team possesses one or two outstanding players, and they're capable of doing that. And it's not a fluke, you know. they have the ability and skill to put it in the top corner. That's just they're at that level. I think sometimes we play a price for having a goalkeeper that's not 6'8". You know, David Raya is an immense keeper, but he's not the tallest. I think, you know, another 6 inches, he might have got his fingertips to that Zaha shot. But again, that's not even a criticism. I'm not criticising. I'm not saying we should get a bigger goalkeeper. You know, we are. I like us just the way we are at the moment, and it's don't let them shoot, and that's easier said than done.
Yeah. And what I tell you, the situation we're in, he was they're all so good at stealing the ball from the opposition, but where they're weak is defending against skillful players and defending against through ball attacks. So again, it's interesting, it's defending against skillful players, because this is the situation where you want, you know, Josh De Silva to step up a level, KLP if he comes in to step up a level, because again, KLP, you know, you could see flashes of him being a really, really dangerous player. And obviously you've got Damsgaard as well, who is obviously coming more into the fore, and he's a very good player, a very skillful player, a very clever player as well. And they've had an extra three days on the training pitch as well, so hopefully this will come into the fore for this game, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, you look at their, we got a good comparison. You know, last time out we were at home to last Saturday we were at home to Everton. Last time out they were at home to Everton. We got the same result. So you know, it's not like they're like they've bashed them 5-0 and they're really on a different level to us. They've got a couple more points than us. They had a really strong performance and a really strong result against Chelsea. We've had the same against Man United. They've got that extra win. They beat Wolves 2-1 earlier on, when Wolves were, you know, they were struggling to get into out of second gear. So yeah, I think the start of both teams to the season has been similar. I just think, you know, again, it sounds like I'm stating the obvious, but we will create chances. We have to take, if we take the chances, we will, there's a good chance we'll take all the points as well.
Yeah, definitely. So listen, we're going to go and find out a bit more about Leeds. We're going to go to Darren from the LS11 podcast. He's going to give us all he knows about Leeds.
Well, hi guys, my name's Darren Harper from the LS11 podcast. Coming on to have a little chat about Leeds. I've been running LS11 for around the last 4.5 years with my mate Ryan, who is from a band called the Pigeon Detectives, and we were nominated for the Best Sports Podcast, the British Podcast Awards, about 3 years ago, which we didn't win, but it's all about getting nominated, isn't it? No, it's not. I was absolutely devastated, but hey-ho. So that's me. I've worked covering Leeds in different capacities on radio for around about the last 15 years. Okay, last season. Well, the second season for Leeds back in the Premier League after, 16 years away. And let's put it down to experience, shall we? It was terrible. Injuries blighted the whole season with, you know, Calvin Phillips out for pretty much the whole season and Patrick Bamford not firing. Leeds not bringing anybody in of note in the January transfer window, which ended up being a calamity because it was devastating. Marcelo Bielsa, who is God to Leeds fans and can do no wrong, was unceremoniously booted out of his position, and they brought in Jesse Marsh for the end, which, look, you know, it seemed to work. Maybe a change was needed at that time. It's difficult to say. If they'd have backed Bielsa in the January transfer window, would it have been slightly different for Leeds come the end of the season? And it's all if and buts, really. Hindsight's a wonderful thing in life, but it ended up that we had to get, obviously, a result in that final game against you guys, or at least better the Burnley result. Newcastle did us a bit of a favour, of course, but you guys, you know, it was a pressure day, really, down at Brentford. It's one of those teams. Brentford are one of those teams, I think, for Leeds that have always been a bit sticky, really. So I don't think anybody went in with, you know, a massive amount of confidence. You know, it was, oh, Leeds will just do the same again. The hope will be there and it'll be dashed. But it was, you know, it turned out to be quite a joyous day in the end. Felt like, you know, you're winning a trophy or something, I think, for most Leeds fans, because staying in the Premier League, it was the most un-Leeds thing to happen, really. And especially your guy getting sent off after that second yellow was just, that sort of thing doesn't happen to Leeds. So it was quite an interesting one. So fantastic that they're, you know, back in the Premier League for a third season. But it's been an interesting summer, really. Obviously, Calvin Phillips going to Man City. Whether or not that's going to be a good move for him, I don't know. It doesn't seem to be so far. I think he's injured already and has played only about 4 or 5 minutes. So Rafinha going off to Barcelona, that, I think that was always going to be on the cards, really. That's his dream club. But, you know, you're going to miss a guy like that. But Leeds have made quite a bit of money out of him. I think they paid 18, 19 million for him and sold him for around 50, if they ever actually get the money off of Barcelona. But that's a whole other story, really. But the start to this season, I think, has been pretty good. It's been pretty impressive, really. There's been some great results, certainly the one against Chelsea at home, where they, got to be honest with you, they absolutely battered Chelsea. Probably the best performance I think I've seen from Leeds, certainly against one of those so-called top teams, for quite a long time. And I think that gave a lot of people, and probably the players as well, a lot of confidence in, you know, maybe this season might be a little different. But then, you know, the bogey teams come out again. Brighton, we've never really done well down at Brighton. It's, one, got a terrible beach. It's full of pebbles. I mean, that's not a beach. Secondly, it's just a very sticky place, I think, for Leeds to go. They've never really done well down there. And I think Potter has them set up quite well. So that was a disappointment. I think in the last game against Everton, a draw, I think Leeds would be disappointed. I think the Everton supporters will be fearful of their season, because if that's how their team are going to play during this season, they are going to be right down in a relegation battle. They set up just to park the bus. It was very disappointing to see a so-called, such a big club, play such negative football and time wasting right from the very beginning. But, you know, that was their game plan. I think Leeds have got to work out a way of getting round that. So when teams come to Elland Road and do try and shut up shop, that they're able to do something about it. I think that's going to be really, really difficult. Signings, well, you know, there's a few signings that Leeds, you know, quite a, the main thing is they need a striker. At this point on deadline day, it looks like they're getting a guy from Marseille, Dieng, which could be very, very exciting. He's young, does seem to be an exciting prospect, you know, in the inverted commas prospect. So that could be an interesting one. They were in for Cody Gakpo at Eindhoven. It looks like it's going to be maybe January, if it does happen. He's staying at Eindhoven for the moment. That would have been the one that most Leeds were very, very happy, I think, really. Jesse Marsh, interesting guy. A lot of people calling him Ted Lasso, obvs. But I think he talks a good talk, Jesse. And he was very good at talking to the media, coming out. And I think, you know, there's been a few little tests and a few sort of question marks over some of his substitutions and some of his tactics in certain games. But the jury is out, I think. I think people will give him some time, obviously. And you know, the old cliche, big shoes to fill after Bielsa. They are massive shoes to fill and a massive bucket that he's got to fill to sit on. But I think, you know, so far, he seems to, and some of the players he's brought in, I think, have been very, very good. Like people he's worked with before, like Aaronson. Aaronson is an absolute baller. He is going to be superb. I think there's no doubt about that. Christensen looks pretty good. Couple of little wobbles here and there. But yeah, no, for me, Aaronson is the one, that the key signing. He looks superb. And I really hope that, you know, they can build on what they've done and get staying in and sort of like, I think at the moment, just something mid-table would just be lovely. I'd be more than happy, I think, for most Leeds fans, just to be just a boring season. It's never going to be that, really. It's never going to be that. But yeah, so people to look out for in Leeds, I would definitely say Aaronson. Patrick Bamford looked really sharp when he came on against Everton, but he's got a bit of a niggly injury, so maybe that might come about again. And I think he got injured in the last home game against Brentford when he celebrated and did his hammy. So I don't know. This weekend, maybe he's fit enough to start. You've also got Joffe there, Joe Gellhart. He's a very, very exciting prospect again. Very, very exciting. He is a great, great player, proper baller. So he'll be one to watch out for as well. And Jack Harrison, I think, has started the season really, really well, to the point where there's a lot of interest from Newcastle around him. I think they've declined a couple of offers already. I think he's looking like he's going to be staying. As for the actual Premier League and top four, bottom three, well, my hometown team, Bournemouth, I think are really, really going to struggle this season. I can't really say, it's too early to say sort of like real bottom three, but I think Bournemouth are going to be there or thereabouts, I reckon, which is, you know, disappointing for my hometown team. But hey-ho, top four, well, could be anything really, couldn't it? But Arsenal look a lot better. Tottenham look a little bit better, but still prone to a mishap here and there. Liverpool are eking out some results, but they don't look as good as they were maybe a season and a half ago. But it's Man City all the way with Haaland knocking them in for what seems like fun. I think they're going to be really, really difficult to top. Brentford last season, I was really impressed by Brentford actually last season. I think they play attractive football, they play exciting football, it's enjoyable to watch. And already this season, I mean, beating that team from over the Pennines by 4-0, I mean, what a result. It was absolutely fantastic. So I've got a lot of time for Brentford. I really loved it when Christian Eriksen came back, and it was wonderful to see him come back and play for Brentford at the end of last season before he's moved to that other team. But that was really, really good to see. I think players that concern, really, the one that always concerns me is Tony. I think he's a quality player, and I think he's one of those front men that can really frighten defenders. And I think if we saw how Llorente fared on Tuesday night against Everton, he's prone to a little mistake here and there. And I think Tony can probably get cause him a fair few problems, I would say. And your new signings, the only one I really know quite a bit about is obviously Ben Mee, which you got, I think, from Burnley. He is a good player. I think you've done some good business, and it's the business I think you've done. And I was just speaking to Billy as well, you've done sort of very sensible business. You've not gone out and paid ridiculous money, which sometimes some teams do when they go up. And I think, especially when you stay in the second season, I think it's, you know, fans always want, well, you need to be spending more money now, you need to be spending more money. And it's true, yeah, you do need to spend, but there are players out there that you can get that don't cost vast amounts of money. Rafinha's one of them. That, you know, no one had really heard of Rafinha before he came, and he was absolutely world class. Maybe that'll happen for Leeds with Dieng. Who knows? Who knows? The game against Brentford itself on Saturday, I think it'll be exciting. I think it'll be tight. I think it'll be end to end. I think there's going to be chances. I don't know whether Pontus is going to be playing, but he's always always been a Leeds favourite until right at the end when, you know, it was all about Pontus. But whether or not the Jansenator will be there, we'll wait and see. But yeah, it's going to be an exciting game. There's no doubt about that. Score prediction, as I said to Billy on our podcast, I think there's going to be goals. It's going to be tight. 9-8. I'm going 9-8. Overs on the goals. Hope that's okay for you. Good luck after Saturday afternoon, around about 5 o'clock for the rest of the season. And hopefully catch you soon. Take care.
This is Darren from the LS11 podcast. And I was on their podcast as well, if you want to go and check it out. Actually, I don't know if you can check it out. I think it's behind a paywall. But still, I was on their podcast. I speak to them pretty much every year, actually, every time we play them. You know, if it's either Darren or if it's the old, it's the Pigeon, the Ryan from the Pigeons as well. From chat to him. Good bloke as well. Like their podcast, which is all good. But anyway, Leeds United coming down on Saturday. It's got a different feel to this. I don't know if it's this old sort of kind of early season thing. It just kind of doesn't have the same danger, you know, when you sort of play these. Like Fulham, we played Fulham a few weeks, and normally Fulham would be like, oh God, you know, there's the fear. But because you're playing them sort of quite early, the first month of the season, it's almost like, you know, almost like if anything goes wrong, it doesn't really matter because we've got months to correct it, isn't it?
And we've got points in the bag as well, you know. Yeah. That allows you that sense of freedom, you know, and that's why I know I mentioned it about Leeds. It's a different season for them. They're not having to kind of go, oh, we'll take a point now. They'll come down and be expecting to win. And I think, you know, we go out and we expect to win as well. I think it's that kind of game. It'll be end to end, and I'm really looking forward to it. But yeah, having it shows you why picking up a point at Selhurst Park on Saturday is so important. On Tuesday was so important. Again, it just means you've got something out of that game. And and if we lose, it's not the end of the world. We're not like Aston Villa, who've just got one win and four defeats. You know, the pressure is already starting to mount there. You know, you have to win, and you know we would like to win, and there's a good chance we will. But having to is that pressure's not there.
No, I mean, you know, Darren talked about the players who we need to look out for Leeds United. I mean, for yourself, Laney. I mean, you talked about it, saying, you know, we've got points on the table, but at the end of the day, basically all we need to do is that it's almost like we're chiseling ourselves up the table, even though we're sort of kind of doing all right. For me, I was happy getting a point against Everton. You know, I was happy getting a point against Palace. And to be quite honest with you, I'd be happy getting a point. I'd love to beat Leeds, but I'm happy to get a point against Leeds, because until you get to this certain level, and then it's almost like once you get to this level, you can start relaxing and then start enjoying yourself. You know, and they've got good players out there. Aronson, you know, he's a good player. You know, Harrison's always been a good player, you know, in their side. You know, James, I don't know if James is going to be around, actually.
They're talking about him going elsewhere. Whether that happens in time, we won't know.
Yeah, so that might shift things a little bit. But, you know, it seems that, you know, he's got them kind of working as a team in a very different way to what Bielsa did. Where Bielsa, and I know a lot of Leeds fans love Bielsa, you can't say anything wrong against Bielsa, but he was like a whipping horse, and he got them just whipped them into just working in a way, and they just worked like that until they were till they were flogged to death almost, and then they kind of got over the line in some ways. And again, this is not disrespecting them, it's just because he worked them in such a way to just work so hard, and it was probably really difficult because, you know, stamina levels, keep going. Whereas Jesse Marsh seems to have kind of got a sort of team bonding thing going on, and, you know, just how we're going to play together, and it's very different, and they're slightly more aggressive and just trying to sort of mix it up a little bit, and, you know, have no worries, and if somebody tries to give it to them, they'll give it back, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think that fitness and that intensity is still there. But I just think they've got more of a plan B about them. So, you know, I'm not going to go into the Bielsa thing too deeply. Again, as you said, it's like talking about, you know, it's like blasphemy, isn't it, when you talk diss him up there. But you know, he only played one way, and you know, if that wasn't working, then he just carried on doing it, and you know, they were losing every week. So, you know, I think it needed a change. But you know, we're as every bit as fit as them. You know, I don't think our fitness levels are kind of, you know, inferior to that. I think we can go toe to toe with them. It's a game I'm really looking forward to, mate.
Definitely. So listen, Laney, give us a score prediction for the Leeds game.
I'm going to go for 2-2 draw.
Ooh. Okay. I'm not going to go 2-0. I've gone 2-0 for every single game so far, and I've got all of them wrong. So this one, I'm actually going to go for a 1-0 win to the Mighty Bees.
So it's there you
go. It's going to be 2-0, isn't it?
It is going to be 2-0, isn't it? So typical. Anyway, listen, this is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast. Thanks for tuning in yet again. Thanks for buying us a beer. Everyone who's bought us a beer, we will shout you in the very near future. Besotted.com/beer. Also Besotted Global, our little social media community, in Besotted.com/global. You can check us out there. Don't forget to write a review, a 5-star review on iTunes. Actually does us the world of good, I've been told. So if you don't mind doing that, then that'll be very nice. We might even read it out someday as well. Don't forget, like I said, to your all good podcast channels, check us out as well. I'm Billy Grant and I've got my man Laney in the house.
Afternoon.
Very much looking forward to the game on Saturday at Leeds United, but as I was going to say, we don't want to be great. What should we say?
Come on, bees.
You bees. Let's beat the Leeds. Brentford FC, come on. Come on, you Brentford. Come on. Come on, you bees. Come on. Come on, you Brentford. Come on. Sit
on. The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Free for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. We understand that the journey as a supporter isn't always smooth sailing, but rest assured you're not alone. There's a vast network of fellow fans who share your passion and may be experiencing similar challenges. Honesty is key in any relationship. If your friend asks you how you are feeling, tell them honestly. If you're going through a difficult time, let them know. Opening up about how you are feeling can really make a difference. After all, they are your mates for a reason. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.